Now, I'll call on our national attorney, Mr. Ken Bass, to answer questions regarding the legislation. In order to keep it in order, and in order for us to have a record as to the regions and the villages that have specific questions, I will ask that the question be written with the name of the person asking the question, the village where he is from, and have him give the question to his regional chairman. The sergeant at arms then will pick up the question from the regional chairman, and the attorney will answer to the best of his ability. Mr. Ken Bass.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I begin, there's one correction I'd like to make to the preliminary analysis. It's on page 3 for those of you that have one. In the Copper Center, the Copper River village acreage selected, the figure should read 345,600, not the 2,345,600 that's there. The figures on page 4 are correct. There's a typographical error on the figure on page 3. It doesn't change the actual allocation to Copper. Let me just summarize first, more briefly than the paper does, the major elements of the settlement for the natives. First, with respect to the land, the bill will provide a total of 40 million acres of land, surface rights and subsurface rights. For the most part, that 40 million acres of land will be selected from an area 900 square miles around each of the villages. That is 25 townships. A township is 6 miles by 6 miles, or 36 square miles. There will be some situations in which less than the 900 square miles will be available for a particular village under the initial selection procedures of the bill. In that case, there is an additional amount of land withdrawn called an in-lieu withdrawal that will be as near as possible to the village. Now, there are certain restrictions on certain lands in the bill. For example, in wildlife refuges and Petroleum Reserve Number 4, there will not be subsurface rights in those areas, but there will be in lieu subsurface rights, that is, compensating subsurface rights that come from lands outside those areas, immediately outside those areas. There is an overall limitation on the selection of lands within wildlife refuges or within state TA'd or state selected lands. No one village can select more than 3 townships, that's 69,120 acres of land from a wildlife refuge, from state TA'd or state selected lands. Now that, if a village is entitled to more than 3 townships, its additional lands will come from lands outside that restricted area. I understand all of these things are terribly complicated and very difficult, I think, for any of us to comprehend quickly. There are a lot of ambiguities in provisions in the bill. There are a lot of things that will not be definitely decided until regulations interpreting the bill are drawn up by Department of Interior, both the Bureau of Land Management and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. On the money provisions, the total amount of money, $962.5 million. But that comes in over a long period of time. The federal appropriation of $462.5 million will come in over the next 11 years. $500 million from royalties on minerals in the state will come in at the rate of 2% of the total mineral value each year until $500 million is reached. We don't know how long that will be. It depends on how fast there is oil production in the state of Alaska. No funds will be distributed to regional corporations from the bill during the first until the enrollment is completed. The enrollment has to be completed within 2 years. It may be completed shorter than that. Depends on how long it takes BIA to enroll all the natives. First question that I have is to please read and explain Section 18B of the Act. Section 18B of the Act says any allotments approved pursuant to this section during the 4 years following enactment of this Act shall be charged against the 2 million acre grant provided in subsection 14H. There is a 2 million acre hardship provision in the bill, which is sort of a catch-all category for various types of land grants under the bill. Pending native allotment applications can, at the option of the individual applicant, continue to be processed through the Department of the Interior. If the application is valid under the law and eventually is processed to obtaining an allotment patent, then the amount of land, that 160 acres, would be deducted from the 2 million acres hardship provision. I think this is a very important question. What will happen if we reject this bill or if the president vetoes it? What can we expect as a future settlement? That's not really a legal question, and you know, it's sort of a crystal ball question. I can only give you my feeling of what would happen. I think this settlement is the best settlement we could possibly have achieved at this time in history. There are a lot of problems, there are a lot of disappointments in certain respects, but overall I think it's an excellent settlement. I think if the natives were to reject the settlement, there is some possibility that that would lead to a presidential veto. It would not ensure it automatically, but there is some possibility it would lead to a veto. My own feeling is that if there is a veto of this bill and it is based on a rejection by the natives of the bill, that any future settlement would be far more unsatisfactory, far less adequate than this settlement would be. And the reasons for that are sort of just human reasons. The members of Congress are individuals, human beings. They feel that they've done a damn good job, a damn generous job in their minds. And they would frankly feel hurt, insulted, if it were rejected by the natives. Now, I'm not saying that's a justifiable reaction on their part. I'm not taking any position on that. But that is a fact. They would resent a rejection, and I think it would lead to a far worse settlement for the Alaska Natives in the future. Question: how could the percentage of population be determined before a complete roll is taken? The answer is it cannot. The analysis provisions that I have before you today are based on the best information I presently have. The percentage of population is taken from the AFN voting rolls in terms of the number of votes allocated to each particular region. Within 60 days after the bill becomes law, the Department of Interior is going to have to make certain in-lieu withdrawals. Those withdrawals will be based on the best available population estimates, the best available land loss percentages that the department can come up with at that time. They will be imperfect. The intent is that the withdrawals will be sufficient to protect the native selection rights in the future. The selection process, by the way, is basically one that the lands out of which native lands will be selected are going to be withdrawn and not available to state selection, not available to homesteading, not available to other legal interest until the natives have selected the lands. And the withdrawals will, if the bill works out properly, be sufficiently great in number that there will be lands available for the native selection. And therefore, I would hope that any errors that are made in in-lieu withdrawals would be ones that would increase the amount of in-lieu withdrawal to ensure that there is no loss of native rights. Question: why wasn't Cordova included in the native community category? In the list of native villages, no native village which had a majority non-native population was included in the list of villages. The reason for that is that to qualify for full land selection rights, a village must have basically met three tests. It has to have had 25 or more residents on April 1, 1970. Now, that is not residents as defined in the census reports, but it's residents as determined by the secretary on the basis of the best information he can obtain. It's the first qualification for a village to receive full selection rights. The second one, the village must have been majority native in its population. And the third one, it must not be a village that is modern or urban in character. That excluded certain villages from the list. However, if a village is not on the list, but does meet those three criteria for full land selection rights, it will be added to the list by the Department of Interior and will then select its lands. Question is whether the natives won't have to wait until the enrollment is completed and wait to see whether the non-resident natives elect to have the 13th corporation before they can find out how much money goes to each region. That is correct. There will be a period of waiting until the roll is completed before the allocation of funds to particular regions and the actual allocations of land are determined. Where will the funds go during the first fiscal year? Will it be stayed in the U.S. Treasury, or will we be able to bank it and collect interest? The bill does not have any provisions on interest during the first 2 years. What the bill says is that $12.5 million, when it's appropriated by Congress before June 30th of this year, will go into the United States Treasury. During the next year, additional money, $70 million, will go into the United States Treasury. That money will remain in the Treasury until the roll is complete. I'm sorry, in the second year it's $50 million, not $70 million. That money remains in the Treasury until the roll is completed. Now, there is an exchange of discussion between Senator Gravel and Alan Bible, who is the Senate manager of the bill on the Senate floor when it finally came up, in which Senator Gravel asked whether the Secretary of the Treasury is not supposed to invest those funds and earn interest on the funds while the roll is being prepared. Senator Bible said he is supposed to. That is the committee's intent. If the 13th region becomes a reality, will this corporation have to be set up under Alaska state laws? It's my reading of the bill that it will. But again, it's an ambiguity in the language of the bill. The bill states that the regional corporation shall file articles of incorporation within 18 months, and the 13th region will not know if it exists until after the enrollment. Well, it's possible, first, that the enrollment could be completed in 18 months. I don't think it's likely to happen, but it's possible. If the enrollment were completed before the 18 months and the election for the 13th regional corporation held before that time, then there'd be no conflict. I would expect that if the enrollment is not completed within that time and consequently the articles of incorporation cannot be filed within that time, that the act would be interpreted by the department to allow later filing as soon as practicable of 13th regional corporation articles of incorporation. The bill states that within 3 years after enactment, Secretary of Interior is asked to report to the Congress on the status of federal programs. The purpose of that provision is to review the entire set of BIA and other government programs going to Alaska Natives for recommendations on what should happen to those programs. In the bill that was passed by the Senate last year, there was an automatic termination of BIA services. When the bill passed, it said certain services will no longer be afforded to the Alaska Natives. That provision is not in the bill now, but there is a provision that requests a study to see whether there will be a future termination of BIA or other federal programs to Alaska Natives. There's been no decision, to my knowledge, there has been no proposal made or no in-depth study of the termination. There are some feelings. There will be some people who will move to terminate BIA services. There will be resistance to those movements. We don't know at this time what the outcome would be. Will the land selections by the regional and village corporations have to be surveyed within the 3-year period before title is granted? No, there is a provision in the bill, it's section 22J, which states that if there are any areas which have not been surveyed in a manner that's adequate to grant the titles provided under the Act, the secretary shall basically do the best job he can in terms of granting the land subject to a subsequent survey. Once the township is selected in the village, can a non-native build in the selected area? As soon as the lands are conveyed to the natives, then that's native land. And if the native corporations that own the land wish to sell land to non-natives or to other natives, they can go ahead and do so. For a period of 20 years, the regional corporation will review those land transactions and comment on them, but would not have the power to veto them. Question, what is the procedure for instituting land selection by a small village not listed in the bill, such as Solomon, Council, Haycock, especially for the preservation of cemeteries? The 2-million-acre hardship provision is left to the secretary to administer. And the secretary is to withdraw those lands and then to convey those lands to the small villages and to protect the cemetery sites. The bill has almost no actual language in it of how that's going to be carried out. It'll have to be worked out in the Department of Interior through administrative regulations. St. Lawrence Island is a reindeer reservation. How does it affect the people in the land settlement? St. Lawrence Island, for purposes of this bill, is treated just like any non-wildlife refuge area. The reindeer reserve is not a wildlife refuge, and the lands are not subject to the 3-township limitation. The question is, on this study of the BIA services, why is there a phase-out in BIA situation existing today? Approximately 76 BIA employees were phased out recently. I'd like the BIA people to correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I understand that's budgetary cuts in general across BIA. Is that correct? And it has nothing, I'm informed that is correct, it has nothing to do with the land claim settlement. Can Juneau natives select land within 2 miles of Juneau City, the borough boundary? The Juneau natives are going to be entitled to get, receive, have their title confirmed in, not more than 23,040 acres to be selected in lands in reasonable proximity to Juneau, with the provision that it cannot be within 2 miles from the boundary. And it says Barrett state law, home rule city or first class city. You want to interpret that one?
At the last minute, there was intended to be a 2-mile restriction that the land could not be picked up within 2 miles of the city limit. Then it was discovered that both Juneau and Sitka are now home rule city boroughs. So the language says excluding boroughs. And frankly, nobody knows exactly what it means. My interpretation of it is that the land cannot be within 2 miles of the old Juneau city limits. But really, it's very difficult to interpret.
Yeah, I could just as easily read the restriction as applying only to first-class cities and therefore home rule cities. You can't select within 2 miles of the existing home rule limits. It's just one example of some of the ambiguities in the bill that we'll have to see worked out later. Where villages are close together with overlapping patterns of reserve lands within which selections can be made, may the combined group of villages choose lands beyond the boundary of the reserve townships in the first go-round? The way that's supposed to work is you make the withdrawals for each particular village. And in the case of certain villages that are located closely together, the withdrawals will overlap. As long as there is enough land within the total withdrawal for both of those or all of those villages, for all of the villages to get all of their lands, there will not be additional withdrawals. But if, even with the overlap, there is not enough land for all of the villages, then the shortage will be taken from the lands nearest, immediately outside those withdrawn areas. Question is whether a region or village corporation will have legal power to borrow from conventional lending institutions if they're incorporated as municipalities, or if they're incorporated or municipalities, using the appropriated funds in the Treasury as an accounts receivable collateral. There's nothing in the bill that would prohibit use of the funds that come, that come in from the bill as collateral for taking out loans. Depend on the financial policies of the banks. There is a restriction in the bill against sales or assignments or of the stock that is owned by natives in the corporations. That period of restrictions lasts for 20 years. But that does not, as I interpret the bill, in any way affect the ability of a regional corporation to obtain a loan, pledging as collateral the future receipt of funds from the Alaska Native Fund. Question about reservations. Do we get to keep our reservation? If we do, can we get an allotment too? With the existing reservations, the residents there have essentially a limited option. The reservations are automatically terminated unless the residents of the reservation vote to keep the reservation. If they vote to keep the reservation, then the villages in the reservation will get full fee title, not trust title, to the lands in the reservation. But the village or the members in the village communities in those reservations will not be able to share in the monetary provisions of the Act. They will not own stock in the regional or any village corporations. It does not affect the allotment provisions. They continue to be processed independently. And if you have a valid allotment, you'll continue to receive it. Can a person locate and stake for placer mining purposes in selected lands or outside selected lands hereafter? If you're referring to native selected lands, in the roughly 25 townships around the native villages, future mining locations will not be permissible. The land is withdrawn from that purpose. In lands outside the 25 townships, the placement locations can continue for the 90-day general freeze that's provided in the bill. They can continue unless those lands subsequently are withdrawn by the Secretary from mining locations. In the event a village expands, which is limited to townships, how will the village be able to obtain more land for expansion? The determining population for village land entitlement is the population resident in the village on April 1, 1970. If the population has increased since that date or if the village is otherwise expanded, it does not affect the land selection rights of the villages. However, the regional corporations are going to receive a population-based share of roughly 5 million acres of land, which they in turn can allocate down to the villages on the basis of need. A village which has expanded since the date of April 170 and which does not have enough land under the provisions of the bill would be eligible for that additional allocation if it were so allocated lands by the regional corporation. That'll be a native decision, not a secretarial decision. Question is, what's the status of the Lake Iliamina Cook Inlet Recreation Area? Has the federal government withdrawn these lands, or can it? Or will the villages in this area be able to select their townships in the usual way, lands contiguous to their village sites? In the Iliamina classification area, the lands there will be subject to native selection, just as if the classification did not exist with respect to the village selections. With respect to regional corporation selections in that area, if the Secretary continues to maintain that classification, the regional corporation can tentatively select lands in the classification area, but cannot obtain a patent to those lands until the classification is disposed of. That disposition has to come within the next 7 years, and Congress, if Congress decides to withdraw the Iliamina classification and put it into a wildlife area or some other form of classification, then the regional corporation could not select those lands. But if Congress did not decide, the regional corporation would get any lands that it selected in that area. That's not a secretarial decision.
At this time, I'd like to make a couple of announcements. I had a communication with the White House people, and they request that as soon as the convention feels that it can make a decision on whether or not they approve the president signing this measure, that they would like to know. So we'll continue with the questions and answers as long as you feel that you want to continue. Doesn't matter whether we go the rest of the day and into tomorrow, or as long as you have questions. But the president's schedule is very busy with international problems, and they would like to get a feel from the convention as to whether or not the convention assembled would approve of his signing of this measure. He has to fit it into his schedule within the next few days, and he'd like some response from the convention. So with that, we'll recess, and I would ask you to caucus during the recess and discuss this so that when we come back in this afternoon, I can hear from the regional chairman as to what the feeling of their respective groups is.
Okay, now would we need two lawyers then, if one for the regional corporation and one for the villages itself?
Well, I think you're going to find yourself in a situation where on occasion the villages will, it would be desirable to have the villages have independent counsel to advise them, for instance, on land selections, where you might have two villages that would like to select the same piece of land. And I don't think one attorney could properly advise both villages as to the selection. You should have independent counsel for villages.
I thought if we're going to have a problem like that in selecting a piece of land, I think the two villages would work it out between themselves in selecting that land.
Well, hopefully, yeah, but you know.
What do we call an arbitrary?
Arbitration, yeah.
But you know, I don't think any of our villages are that close together where there would be any overlapping, is there?
Stebbins and St. Michael's are. I know those
are
two.
They?
Yeah, they're right next to each other.
That's correct.
And also, just from a point of view of having more talent available.
The positive aspect of the bill for the Chugach people is that inasmuch as they reside within the confines of a national forest system under the they do have a land selection out of the national forest for three townships, for the one village at least, Tietlik, which is was very difficult in the past to gain entry to because of forestry policies for native or non-native people for the right to gain entry for numbers of acres in the national forest. So the positive aspect of the bill, the Native Land Claims Bill, is that the natives will have the opportunity to select three townships contiguous, I believe, to the village, to Tietlik, for instance. We probably are located in a very strategic position here relative to the terminal site. We're not too far away, so we might have some very usable, economic-based land from that standpoint. We have it's unfortunate that the native community of Cordova, however, was not recognized which was at one time known as the village of Iyak, which was encroached on by a township in past years. It was hoped in this legislation that the native community of Cordova, because the natives are still there and through no fault of their own that a selection was made for a town site over the village site. That this situation was not recognized and this situation was not recognized and taken care of. On the other hand, certain other villages in the state were allotted land in a very similar situation: Kodiak, Kenai, Juneau, and Sitka. So, Cordova comes under the same identical criteria for a inequity to these native people who lived in that village, which was blanketed by a selection for town site in the past, and we should have recognition of our rights to an in lieu selection taken, say, out of the national forest around the township of Cordova for the benefit of the native people in that community.
Well, I've been asked for my opinion of the act, and as I measure the act, I have to come up with a measuring stick, and that measuring stick is, does it achieve the goals which the Tlingit and Haida in their convention set forth several years ago, in April of 1968 to be precise? And the answer would have to be, yes, it does that basically. We do come out with 10 villages plus the two under the hardship provision, which will have the right to select up to a full township. There is one other provision pertaining to land that I would like to point out. As you recall, the 2 million acres of hardship must be eventually awarded to the natives. This will be a part of their full entitlement. As to how it may be awarded is subject to the discretion of the secretary. Now, the types of land that will be subtracted from the 2 million will include the following: the hardship provisions for Juneau, Sitka, Kodiak, and so forth, cemeteries, historic sites, allotments, and a few others. Whatever is left out of that 2 million, after all of these are subtracted, will be divided among the regional corporations according to population, which means that Southeast will have a crack at some land as well. And these selections would come out of the 2.6, primarily around Yakutat and Tlukwan. So that land-wise, we would appear to do all right. The amount of money is on a population basis. This would appear to be beneficial to us. However, as I look at our loss under this, I admit it did not come out the way either the AFN or the Central Council wanted it. I would say mechanically that my recommendation would be, based on everything we have heard, that we go ahead and prepare to accept, and that we also, as a part of this recommendation, start to line out the improvements that we want to make in the bill. And obviously, the bill requires some clarifications, some improvements, and I'm the first to concede we're not perfectly happy with the bill.